Now for another edition of Memories and Music here on CIGMFM. This is Ron Smith inviting you to join us now for the next hour with interesting conversation and some very good music. Now we introduce Gary Peck with today's special guest.
You can recall the early days of the National Hockey League in Canada following its inception in 1917. It was an era when early Stanley Cup winners included the Toronto Arenas, Ottawa Senators, Toronto St. Pat's, Victoria Cougars, Montreal Canadiens, and the Montreal Maroons. Today on Memories of Music, we are pleased to have Sudburyan Sammy Rothschild, a member of the 1925-26 Stanley Cup Montreal Maroons, as well as the Pittsburgh Pirates and the New York Americans. In a few minutes, we'll return and begin our conversation with Mr. Rothschild. However, first, we'll hear from our music host for the day. Welcome back to Memories of Music. Our guest today is Mr. Sam Rothschild. And Mr. Rothschild, to begin, would you provide us with some biographical information about yourself?
Well, I was born and raised in Sudbury, and 1899, I went to public and high schools here. And then in 1917-18, which was my age, I went to McGill, where I spent 2 years there. And while at McGill, I played on three amateur hockey league teams and two baseball teams in the summertime. I returned to Sudbury in 1919 and played in the Sudbury Junior Wolves, Senior Wolves. And also played baseball in Sudbury, for Sudbury. In 1923, in June the 21st to be exact, in the baseball game up in Espanola, I broke my leg on a squeeze play that I had arranged for. I squeezed the man in all right, but running to first base, the first baseman dropped over my leg and I went up in the air, and as a result, I had a broken leg. The leg was set and wasn't set quite right. And ether was the means of the anesthetic in those days, and it really turned my stomach. I didn't want to have it reset again, so I was left with a kink in my leg, and left that leg about a half an inch shorter than the other one, and also prevented me from running on my skates, which was one of my strong forts in hockey. Mm-hmm. I used to run on my toes, skates, to get a quicker start, to make a breakaway also, in back checking. And this way, there's a leg with a kink in it and a little shorter. I had to stride. Anyway, in 1924-25, the Montreal Maroons was formed. And the fellow manager at that time was a chap I'd played hockey for. I played baseball and hockey for in my days of 1917-18 in Montreal. And the name was Cecil Hart. He was the son of the donor of the Hart Trophy. Mm-hmm. Well, Cecil formed the Maroons, and he called me from Montreal and said, I'd like to meet you at the train and to bring down one man with you. It was Gerald Monroe, who played in the old Sudbury Wolves and up to 1923. In the fall of 23, the Sudbury Five fellows went down and turned pro with Hamilton. So Monroe and I went down. We were given $1,000 to sign, and $3,500 a year, a two-year contract. So we went down to Montreal. They were building the Forum. The Canadian Arena Company, which owns the Forum, was the owner of the Maroon Hockey Club. And the rink wasn't quite finished. There was no ice in it, and we were supposed to be taking exercises in there. And a week before the season started, there's no ice in the rink, so they rushed us to Ottawa, and there we were, about 20, 25 old pros and young amateurs trying to make the team to get our practice on in the Ottawa Arena. And we had to practice morning, afternoon, and night, whenever the ice was available, mm-hmm. in 1 week to try and get in shape. And most of us felt like I did. If we had the $1,000, then we'd have given it back to them.
Back home.
Told them to go to hang with their contract.
Was the $1,000 bonus comparatively high at that time for signing?
Well, I don't know whether, because I can't tell from other mm-hmm. places. I don't know what it was before in other days, but...
You mentioned a number of players from Sudbury also went down to Hamilton?
Sudbury team of 1922-23 was the last year we had good senior hockey up here.
Mm-hmm.
Then, and Shorty and Red Green, Alec McKinnon, Clarence Poacher, and Charlie Langwa, two defensemen, all went to Hamilton and left us in Sudbury here, me with my leg that had been broken in June, and a few other fellows. Joe Ironstone was one of them, a gold miner. Left us here, and we only played intermediate hockey that year and didn't go any farther than winning the Northern Ontario. So
that's a large number of players to come out of the community, isn't it?
You see, and McKinnon and the Greens were born here. Boucher wasn't born here. His father, the superintendent of the CPR, was here at the time, but he had, himself wasn't born. Charlie Langwa had been brought in the year before from Ottawa to play. But so I was a year late really getting into hockey. Mm-hmm. Well, the Maroons didn't open up the arena. They were afraid that we wouldn't make a very good showing, so the Canadians played the first game. Canadians didn't have any part to do with the arena. They were just were paying rent to play there. And they opened up, and then we came back. And but right from the start, the team was very, very successful at the gate, because it was the first English-speaking team, really, since 1914, since the First War, when the old Montreal Wanderers was broken up and or quit playing, and so the people were anxious to see a Canadian or an English-speaking team in there. So we really, tickets were at a premium. It was a success story right from the first. And I can remember going, we lived in a rooming house, and four of us to a room, one basin in there, no toilet facilities or anything. And with some of these old-timer pros that were not adverse to having beer or something at night, we'd go up and have a practice, and we'd come back at night and go. And, of course, we had to divvy in whether we drank a beer or not. So get a couple of cases of Molson's Frontenac, not Molson's, I mean, about the Frontenac beer. Mm-hmm. And we had quite a time there. The people took a shine to us, and it was a wonderful feeling.
How old were you when you started with the Maroons?
I was 24.
24 years of age. Of course, as you had indicated earlier, Montreal, you were familiar with the community, having attended university in the area. What did you study at McGill?
I was taking arts, like the ordinary fellow takes arts. Mm-hmm. He figured he should go there because his father has enough money to send him.
Right.
Nothing in particular. But I
Sports was your interest.
I was interested in pool and bowling.
Pool and bowling.
Up at the McGill Union. In fact, the second year I was called into the office and told by the dean that I wouldn't be permitted to take my exams because I had missed too many
absenteeism.
Somebody had forgotten to yell my name out when they were called on
the
roll.
The person you had made arrangements with ahead of time to yell your name out.
Well, it's got a little fear.
Who were the people behind the Montreal Maroons? I think you mentioned, was Dr. Hart one of them?
No, Dr. Hart wasn't one of them. But Montreal, I guess, in those days was really a financial center of Canada.
Mm-hmm.
There was Beattie from the CPR at that time, president of CPR. There was Jimmy Strand, Strand's bread company. There were Arnold and Cushing, two stockbrokers. There was Senator Raymond, Donna Raymond. And there was Dawes from Dawes Beer, and a few others on it. Mm-hmm. These fellows were wonderful to us. And in some cases, like for instance, Dunk Monroe was given the program concessions for the forum,
mm-hmm.
program that you've seen.
Yes.
And Dunk Monroe was given that, and also the paper products on the CPR, like mm-hmm. Dixie cups,
right.
towels, things like that. He really made a fortune. He had a suite at the Mont Royal Hotel and lived like a king.
Many added benefits.
Yeah.
When youngsters grow up today, many of them have that longing to become a professional hockey player. Was that the case as far as you're concerned back in the 20s? And
oh, yes. Everybody,
you had that desire?
Everybody. I didn't. When the five fellows went to Hamilton, I figured, sure, that I could make it too because I had a pretty good rating with them between the Sioux had Bill Phillips and the two cooks, Bill and Bun Cook, and Babe Donnelly, and and Flat Walsh in goal. So they had good, and we competed on an even level with them, and I certainly wasn't any weak sister in the Sudbury team.
No. Could you recount the circumstances surrounding your joining the team? How did it occur?
Well, it just came like a bolt out of the blue to me. Of course, I should say that I 1923, and 21st of June, I broke my leg. It was slow recovering.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went down, I was asked to go down to London and bring some fellows with me. And I went down to London, Ontario. They were getting into a Canadian amateur league, a Canadian American league at that time. So I was there for 2 weeks, and then I was afraid. I went out to practice for baseball, and my leg didn't seem strong enough. So as a result, I came back home here, and we played this intermediate hockey that I'd spoken of. And so,
mm-hmm.
But I figured that the next year I was good enough to, my leg was strong, and I went, and I did, and I had no regrets, of course.
No. Who approached you? How did
Cecil Hart just phoned me from Montreal. In those days, the different teams had a reserve list of four amateurs.
Mm-hmm.
This list was known only to the different teams, and they had to respect that list. This was to keep from amateur from bidding against one team against the other, something like that.
Right.
And he had me and Dunk Monroe on this, Gerald Monroe on this Sudbury team, and he also had Bill Phillips and Dutch Kane, who was up playing for the Sioux, and those two were signed the same years as we did.
Mm-hmm.
Not Phillips. Phillips refused to go, and he came to the Maroons the second year, the year that we won the Stanley Cup.
Okay. On that note, I think we'll return the program to our music host and come back in a few minutes and talk about hockey on the Montreal Maroons. Welcome back to Memories and Music. Our guest today is Mr. Sam Rothschild, member of the Stanley Cup Montreal Maroons in the 1920s. Mr. Rothschild, would you mind sharing with us some of your reminiscences about the early Montreal Maroons? I believe, for example, you were on the team the first year they were formed.
That's right. Well, the first team was comprised mostly of amateur. There were two proven pros, Benedict and Broadbent, and there were a couple of pros that had been playing quite a while, namely Louis Berlinquet from the Canadiens and Alfie Skinner, who had played was within the Western League out west. They were also on the first team. Some of the amateurs were, besides Dutch Kane and Shorty Horn was down there. He was a Sudbury boy. And there was Denny Dinsmore, who was an amateur, a junior from Toronto, and Dunk Monroe, who was made captain of the team, had played senior hockey for the old Granites. And there was Frock Lowry from Ottawa, and then eventually Frankie Carson came from Ottawa. These are players that are on the first team. And the second team, if time we won the championship,
mm-hmm.
if you
yes.
wish me to mm-hmm. recall that, we added Nell Stewart, who a Toronto boy, had been playing amateur, so-called amateur hockey, from Cleveland, and Babe Siebert from the OHA. These were two big boys, over 6 feet and over 190 pounds, which in those days was big.
Mm-hmm.
And then Reg Noble was bought from Toronto. He had been a center man, and he was turned into a defenseman. Now, the team that won the Stanley Cup had Benedict in goal, Reg Noble, and Dunk Monroe on the defense, and the third defenseman was Toots Holloway, who was from Belleville. The first line, I'd been on the first line the first year, but when Siebert came along, he replaced me on the first line with Nell Stewart at center, Broadbent right wing, and Siebert on left wing. The second line, we had Denny Dinsmore, Toronto boy at center, and Frank Carson, who they'd just purchased that year too, on right wing. I was on left wing. halfway through the season, when we were just winning and losing, not going any place, Eddie Girard came to me and he said, "Sam," he said, "we have Phillips on our reserve list." And he says, "I couldn't get him to play last year." He said, "I think I'd make a try to get him this way if you think he can make the team." Well, I said, "He certainly could. After all, they beat us, their team in Sudbury, and you've got five players from Sudbury who are playing for the New York Americans now. Played for Hamilton, playing for the New York Americans." And I said, "Bill and Bun Cook, who were on the wings, was Phillips who played center, are now playing out at Saskatoon in the Western Hockey League, so I don't see any reason why he shouldn't be able to make this team." Mm-hmm. So he went after Phillips and he obtained him. So Phillips came halfway through the season. They gave him $18,000 for 2.5 years, which is big money in that day. I can remember Phillips coming in and I arranged for an apartment for him. He came with his wife and little boy. And then he came out to practice, and then before he went on the ice to practice in the Montreal Maroon in the Forum there, which was very hot, it was a heated rink, because Phillips had never played in the heated rink in his life. And so he was told to step on the scales by Bill O'Brien, our trainer. And he says, "I'm always weigh the same. It doesn't matter, 160 pounds stripped." He stepped on the scales, he weighed 160 stripped. We had a 2-hour practice, and Phillips was, he came in and he was pretty leg weary and really perspiring. And he's built, O'Brien said, "Step on the scale, let's see how much you weigh." He stepped on the scales and he weighed 156 in one practice of 2 hours. And Phillips couldn't believe it. Well, the first few games, Phillips was trying to make an impression, make a name for himself, and was trying to body check nearly everybody that came in. He found it a little different in pro hockey than amateur hockey. As a result, he became very discouraged. He wasn't getting any plays, wasn't scoring any goals, even getting any assists. He was pretty despondent. So then one night, we were playing against the Americans. The Americans, as I said, had five of the Sudbury players mm-hmm. that Phillips had played against and I had played with. So I asked Eddie Girard to start our line out, the second line of Phillips, Carson, and myself out against the Sudbury team. I said, "After all, Phillips played against these fellows and was a star, and he should be just as good up here." And we got a lucky break. Phillips went in and scored a goal in less than a minute. And then, as they do today, even as soon as they score a goal, they take off that line. So Eddie wanted to take out the line. He said, "No, leave us out again. Leave us out mm-hmm. for a while." So went a while. Phillips was all full of vim and vigor. Mm-hmm. He rushed down, and I remember Charlie Langer was coming around the net with the puck, and we never used to go in there and check a man in his own end, because they could forward pass in their own area. But, mm-hmm. And if you went in, if you didn't get a man while you're offside, right. Automatically they blow the whistle, you see. So, but this time Phillips rushed in, indeed. Langer came around the net, Phillips took the puck and scored it to the net. So he scored 2 goals in less than 2 minutes. And from that time on, he was the regular man on their second line. Mm-hmm. Well, it came to the playoffs. Ottawa finished first and we finished second. The National Hockey League.
That was quite a feat, being your second year in the league.
Yeah, quite a feat. So we went in, we had played 2 games with Ottawa, goals to count. The first game was in Montreal, and before the first game, Dunk Monroe, the captain of the team and the defenseman, got the flu. So he didn't play in those two games, and he didn't play in the 4 games we played against Victoria. And Nell Stewart was moved back to the defense. And Bill Phillips went up centering the first line. And Denny Dinsmore came back to centering our line, the second line. Well, the first game ended in a 1-1 tie in Montreal. The second game, we went to Ottawa and we beat them 1-0. Phillips passed to Babe Sieber for the winning goal, and that was it. We won. Well, when Victoria came down from the Western Hockey League, and that was the last year that they came down. Did come down. They disbanded after that.
The league disbanded.
The Western League disbanded, yes. And they sold. That's why they had more teams, 10 teams. Chicago and Boston, and those teams were practically comprised of Western League players.
I see.
And Stewart, from his defense position, scored 7 goals. We beat Victoria 2-0, 3-0, and we lost 3-2, and then we beat them 4-0. 11 goals we scored. He scored 7 of them himself from the defense position. Stewart was one of the best hockey players that hasn't really been given enough credit, because he was a quiet, unassuming fellow. Mm-hmm. Wasn't a fellow to talk, but he could take care of himself in a fight, all right. Mm-hmm. And he had a few of them, only a few of them. In those days, there were no helmets or anything, and there were no sticks. You just drop your glove and bang. Mm-hmm. Usually one blow finished the fight. Stewart could take care of himself. But other than that, he didn't.
It's your view that he's a very underrated player.
Well, he's very underrated. People think he was lazy, mm-hmm. because he used to skate straight up. He had a big... His stick was almost straight on the ice like that. Mm-hmm. A fellow that skates like that and controls the puck close to his body is a harder fellow to check. Mm-hmm.
The first year the Montreal Maroons were in the Hockey League, how many games would you play?
30.
30 games, and you played in all of them that first year?
I played
year.
In all the games for 3 years.
In all of the games during that period of time?
Yeah.
Who were some of the other outstanding players within the NHL at that time? Nell Stewart being with the Maroons, who would be some of the stars on the other teams?
Well, taking Ottawa had a good team. They had Nyber and Dennehy and Hooley Smith was their big line. In those times, we only carried 10 players, you know.
Is that right?
Yeah. It was 10 players and a goaltender. That's all you're allowed to dress.
And if the goaltender was injured, it would be a lot of scrambling around to find
nine
players to play the position, I suspect.
Well, no, they'd like to get somebody out of the crowd, an amateur or something. Hmm.
Talking about Ottawa, they would have had a strong hockey tradition with the famous Silver Seven in an earlier era.
Oh, yes. Ottawa had a good team. It wasn't because they didn't have a good enough team that they disbanded. Hmm. It was because they didn't have a big enough rink. Mm-hmm. The old Ottawa rink wasn't big enough. I think it only held about 5,000 people or so. Mm-hmm.
On the New York Americans, some of the main players?
Well, New York Americans had... they had... had Lionel Conacher was on the defense. And Reese. They had the two Greens, McKinnon. They had Billy Birch. They had... Eddie Bouchard and a few others. I just can't think of the names just now.
Mm-hmm. Nell Stewart, getting back to the Montreal Maroons, won a number of scoring championships, didn't he?
He did, yes. Nell Stewart was a fine, fine fellow. He was really an idol of the fans. Boy, the girls, not girls, I mean the way the women took to him was... You can say beating him off with a stick, but that's about the size of it. He was a good-looking fellow. He was very clean. Mm-hmm. Nell Stewart didn't have a hair on his body. Mm-hmm. And the first year they came down there, they asked me to go and stay with him and Siebert, mm-hmm. kind of keep a check on things. Boy, oh boy. I had a hard time getting out of trouble. But Nell said he dressed immaculately, plainly. His hair was pushed back, and that was before you had all these Vaselines and mm-hmm. everything. Mm-hmm. He wore always a white shirt with a color, you know, brown or mm-hmm. blue, mm-hmm. like that. He wore a pinstripe suit, dark suit. He wore black silk socks and black shoes, always shined to the brightest. Mm-hmm. Nell Stewart was really a ladies' man, but he didn't. When it came to conversation, he was lost. His education had been practically nil. He left school to play hockey. Mm-hmm. Played hockey in Toronto, and then he played hockey in Cleveland. But he was honest as they make him. In fact, I was supposed to go into business with Nell Stewart until mm-hmm. I was sold to Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm. All right, I think we'll leave it on that note. We'll come back and discuss further with you professional hockey at the time. First, now we'll turn back to our music host. Welcome back to Memories of Music. Our guest today is Mr. Sam Rothschild. And Mr. Rothschild, could you continue with your reminiscences about professional hockey in the 20s and the Montreal Maroons in particular?
Well, the second year, of course, when we won the Stanley Cup was the big year. And all the mail for the players used to be delivered to the Forum. And a couple of us would take it upon ourselves to send letters and pictures of girls in bathing suits to different fellows that were self-conscious and thought they were, you know, just the cat's meow.
Yes.
And these fellows would open the mail up in front of us, and here a couple of us would be sitting back, and they'd say, look at this here. She wants me to send a photograph. And we, meanwhile, had taken a name out of a telephone book, like mm-hmm. Charles Smith,
right.
An address. She gave her, now, send me this here, and I want it, or else send a hockey stick, an autographed hockey stick. I'm going to raffle it off for the church or something. Mm-hmm. And they had these fellows running around and boasting about all the girls that were writing to them. Of course, there were some that were writing to them at all.
Mm-hmm. No shortage of pranksters at that time, then?
No, the prankster we had was, but that year of the Stanley Cup was really the crowning thing, and certainly that is when I began to think of getting out of hockey and getting into a business, trying to capitalize not only on my own popularity, but the popularity of some of the fellows I was playing for.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the first chance I got was when a Montreal businessman came to me and asked me if I knew Howie Morenz. Well, I knew Howie fairly well. I knew his wife when she was a little girl, mm-hmm. when she was 14 years old, 15 years old, I knew her. And so if I could get him, they wanted to start a hat shop, Howie Morenz hat shop. The idea was for this fellow would finance it, and I'd be running the shop, and Howie would use his name, and he'd be in there to sign autographs or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I approached Howie, but he wouldn't go for it. He was selling, in the off-season this was, he was selling cigars for Simon's Cigar Company.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then, I got an idea through a fellow by the name of Andy Hamilton. He was a past president of the Canadian Lacrosse Association, and he was in the insurance business. And he says, why don't you go into that with Stewart, get Stewart to go in. So Stewart and I took a course. Stewart didn't do very much because I was going to quit playing hockey and run this, but his name meant this here was for General Insurance, and with the number of influential and wealthy businessmen, you know, backers of the Maroon and mm-hmm. And fans and everything, it was an absolute sure thing that this could make a success. Also, an agency of the Sun Life Insurance Company.
Mm-hmm.
So I took all these different instructions and learning to be an insurance man, when all of a sudden I got word that I was sold to Pittsburgh, which was a new expansion team.
Pittsburgh Pirates. What year was that? Or what season
that
was
that? That was 27.
Were you sold midway?
Fall of 27. See, the fall before the season starts. Season mm-hmm. starts in, they go practice in September. Season usually starts in October. So this was in mm-hmm. July and August, they're around there.
So you reported to Pittsburgh?
I reported to Pittsburgh, and I played a few games there, and I got the flu, and I went home back to Montreal. When I was in Montreal, I got word from New York Americans that they bought my contract. New York had bought it because, as I was the first Jewish mm-hmm. player in the NHL, the number of Jewish people in mm-hmm. New York should be a big attraction mm-hmm. there. So that's where I went, and I played about a month and a half. We had two sections of the league at that time, until this one night when I went to hit some big guy, and I threw my whole 125 pounds at him, and he weighed about 220, and he got the better of the brawl.
You were very light for an NHL player.
I was the lightest player I think that ever played. I don't know if anybody was near that light.
Mm-hmm.
Program that I've shown you here has me listed that as in 1928
mm-hmm.
as 136 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
But I know when I stepped on the scales of the Montreal Maroons the first time, it was 125 pounds. Mm-hmm.
I have an excerpt I'd like to read over the air from one of the newspapers when you were playing for the New York Americans. Quote, "The Star-Spangled Outfit showed big improvement all along the line, but nowhere more noticeably than in the work of our Jewish playmate, Sammy Rothschild. Sammy is going better every time out, picking his spots carefully, roughing the boys up when need be, shooting straight for the net, and following up his shots when the chances look good for a rebound." So certainly you were a success in with the New York Americans at that time, a popular player, I suspect.
Yeah, the team wasn't a success.
No.
Well, at last, at this knee, I went back to Montreal to the Maroon doctor,
mm-hmm.
and he gave me electric vibrations, and the knee was all right. I didn't play any more hockey. I coached teams. I skated. Mm-hmm. I curled, golfed, and fished and hunted. Never had an ache or pain.
Mm-hmm.
That was in the end of February 1928. And in 1968, the knee gave way again, 40 years later.
Mm. So your professional hockey career was terminated, was it in the season of
1927-28. The end of February 1928.
When you were on the Stanley Cup champion team, what was it like to be a player and to have finally won the Stanley Cup? Now, it was in your second year, but could you share the
everybody
excitement?
Everybody wanted to give you a party, put
mm-hmm.
on a party for you. We had one of these fellows would take us to their own special shooting grounds. You know, they had big farms.
Mm-hmm.
I know we went out there to shoot partridge, and they take us to their homes. Another fella had a maple syrup
mm-hmm.
from getting a maple syrup. We went out to that. I had to used to have some pictures of that. But everybody was very nice to us. We were just idolized there.
You were probably ready for a party because you mentioned the season lasted 30 games before the playoffs, and they were 60-minute games. You played how many minutes during those games?
Well, I played about the same, 25 minutes.
About 25 minutes. So today when we talk about...
You see, in killing penalties, it was the practice that we had one man on your team as a penalty killer.
Mm-hmm.
This Dinny Dinsmore would face off, and he'd get the puck, and he'd hang on to it, take near the boards. He didn't stop play for the puck near the boards or anything like that. They keep it and keep it. Then they used to face off right where it occurred, right practically 5 feet from the boards, that's all.
Mm-hmm.
So he could keep the puck pretty near the whole 2 minutes. That was the idea. So he didn't see them like they do now. They have to forecheck going in after the puck to try and keep it in the other fellow's end.
Mm-hmm. During the 20s, strong rivalry among certain teams, two Montreal teams, for example?
Well, it was not as bad as you'd think it was. There was a friendly rivalry because... in my case, I knew some of these players. I knew Marens from before. I knew Bill Cachou.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Cachou was from the Sioux, Ontario, you see, and he and his wife were down there, and after a game, coming out from the game, whoever had wives, like in our case, Broadbent and Benedict were the only two
mm-hmm.
who were married that were staying with us, and... their wives would be at the games, of course, waiting for you. And we'd go and talk to each other like that.
Mm-hmm.
But there wasn't any really bitter rivalry. There was bitter, I shouldn't say no rivalry. There was rivalry, of course, but no bitter feelings. Sort.
Mm-hmm.
And we were always treated well there.
Mm-hmm. Back to the Maroons with one last question. I've noticed in photographs that you always that you always had a cap on. The reason for that?
Well, I wore a cap. In fact, there were three of us wore a cap about the same time, although I think Aurel Joliet was maybe a year or so ahead of us.
Mm-hmm. Playing for, was it the Canadians?
The Canadians, Joliet had been out in Saskatoon, too.
Mm-hmm.
He originally played for Iroquois Falls. As out in Saskatoon. He came down, he played for Canadians. And he wore a cap because he had quite a bit of hair.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in my case, and similar in the case of Harold, or Baldy, as we used to call him, Cotton,
mm-hmm.
playing for Toronto, we wore caps because we were going bald.
Mm-hmm.
I started to lose my hair when I was 19 years old. And Baldy, I guess, lost his maybe before that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was why we wore a cap. Mm-hmm. Gold miners wore a cap.
Mm-hmm. Of course, they wouldn't have face masks. You wouldn't have pads at that time, I suspect?
Oh, yeah, we had pads, but they weren't near as good as they are now.
No.
No.
Limited equipment.
Well, yeah, limited. You had your elbow pads and your shoulder pads, and usually in the old days they were sewn onto your underwear. Not like you do today.
No. All right. I think we'll leave it at that, and when we return and wrap the program up, you could tell us about, very briefly, and I know you've had an extensive involvement in sports following the Montreal Maroon period, but if we could just briefly talk about that.
Yeah.
We'll now return the program to our music host.
Okay.
Welcome back to Memories in Music. Our guest today is Mr. Sam Rothschild, professional National Hockey League player during the 1920s, member of the Montreal Maroons, and then during his last season, the Pittsburgh Pirates and the New York Americans. Mr. Rothschild, as a result of an earlier conversation, you mentioned that Red Dutton was a member of the 1926-27 Maroons?
That's right. Mm-hmm. Red came to us from Calgary, and Red was quite a fellow. He was always playing jokes on the rest of the team, and it was remarkable how Red Dutton could ever play hockey. From the first war, he received terrible wounds, and we used to call him, excuse the expression, a half-assed hockey player, mm-hmm. which is true because his right cheek was practically taken off. All he had there was the skin and the muscle and the bone, mm-hmm. and you wonder how he could skate. Still, he was a good hockey player.
Mm-hmm.
Red was good for the team, not only playing jokes with the fellows, but as he made them the butt of his jokes. And this little fellow, Dinny Dinsmore, that we had playing for us, was a little fellow that never smoked or drank, and very, very clean living little fellow. And Red got quite a joke, quite a kick out of playing jokes on Dinny. For instance, when Dinny went to bed at night, I can remember this one trip to Boston, and we were up playing poker, the rest of us, and Dinny was in bed, and Red slipped in there. I was the only one that he took into his confidence. He took his wallet, was under the pillow. Well, Denny, before we got to Boston in the morning, woke up, he had no wallet. He called the conductor and raised hell. They had the train stop at a station about 20 miles out of Boston. The police came running through trying to see if they could find out. And right till we got into the hotel, Denny still didn't have his wallet. Had no idea. Well, we went down for breakfast, and when Denny went back from breakfast up to his room, there was a wallet on the dresser. Red had taken, just things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Red got a great kick out of, and he played one on me, in fact, it didn't quite work.
Mm-hmm.
When we go to these other places, American cities, we'd usually buy some lingerie, silk stockings,
mm-hmm.
things like that for our wives or girlfriends,
mm-hmm.
whomever it might be. And to escape the duty coming back, we used to hide them in our bunks and things like that. Well, we went to Red and I and three other fellows went into this department store and we bought some things. I bought some things too, and all the sales ladies are cute, of course. And,
mm-hmm.
and so we made mention of, would you like to go to the hockey game tonight, or hockey, professional hockey player? They said no, they didn't think so. It wouldn't go well. We had tickets, and if you change your mind, let us know, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when we get back to the hotel with whatever purchases we'd made, we'd usually show them to each other.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the fellows had cigarettes, cartons of cigarettes, things like that. But the ones that had bought clothes or something for our wives or sweethearts. So I didn't open mine up at all. Red kept saying, what did you buy, Sam? I mm-hmm. said, well, I'm not going to open it up. It's not too big a parcel. I'm going to just put it in the bunk. And besides, because we'd come into Montreal in the morning, the customs would be around very early, and they just say, you got anything? No. But I says, when we got, when the customs men were through, I says, I opened my parcel, and here was a card in it, just a plain card saying, dear Mr. Hockey Player, if you care to call me at this number, and I can arrange for another girl, and we'll go to the hockey game. So I let out a roar and said, there you go. By golly, can you imagine that? The only time I don't open up the parcel, there's a chance to have a date with a girl. And Red laughed to beat the band. And it wasn't until a month later he told me he had written the note himself and put it, when the girl was wrapping it, he put it there to put it in.
Huh. I suppose there are many similar stories that you could share with us.
Oh, there's many.
As often is the case with a good interview, we're running out of time, and that's unfortunate. I know, Mr. Rothschild, that you've been involved in numerous sports activities in this area. Certainly we remember of you from the Sudbury 1932 Wolves when they won the Memorial Cup. You also were involved in curling and golf and, as I mentioned, other areas of sports. So I think what we'll have to do is come back another time and interview you on that part of your life, if you don't have any objection to that.
That's fine.
Okay. Thank you very much. And I.
Memories in Music is a weekly presentation of CIGM-FM for Inco Metals Company. I'm Ron Smith. And next Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock, we invite you to join us again for another interesting guest in conversation with Gary Peck. Until then, have a good week, won't you? And enjoy it again next Sunday afternoon. We'll be back, of course, with some good music. Have a nice week. Bye for now.